The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, February 9th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Enjoy the show.
How am I doing? Am I doing okay? I'm president. Hey, I'm president! Can you believe it, right?
Hi, guys. Thanks for checking in with K-Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. How about that big win in Missouri? Marking the 35th flip from red to blue since the creepy tweeter became president, Democrat Mike Reeves defeated his Republican opponent by 3 points. This district in Missouri went for Donald by 28 points. In other words, the district has swung by 31 points towards the Democrats since Donald won last year.
You win!
That's huge. In addition to the 35 legislative seats Democrats have picked up, they've also flipped the governorship in New Jersey and the U.S. Senate seat in Alabama. Republicans, meanwhile, have flipped only 4 legislative seats from blue to red during Donald's tenure.
You suck!
Which is exactly where we need to be. Things are looking up, guys. 2018 is looking great. We are looking at the largest battleground list in a decade. On Thursday, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, expanded its House battleground list to 101 Republican-held seats, an increase from its 91 targets as of November 2017. South Carolina, New Jersey, Ohio, and Texas are all considered in play now. Hillary carried 23 districts that were GOP districts in 2016, and the DCCC has found even more beyond that, where good old Donnie is no longer considered the belle of the ball. But we don't have to take the Democrats' word for it. The nonpartisan Cook Political Report issued new ratings for 21 districts on Thursday. To be fair, the report came with both good and bad news. First, the bad. Republicans have cut Democrats' lead in the 538 average of generic congressional ballot polls in half, from roughly 12 points in December to about 6 points today, which is the bare minimum we need, they say, to overcome the challenges of Republican gerrymandering and Democrats' tendencies to cluster in one area. That is frighteningly close. Generic ballots need to stay at 6, or more realistically, 7 points. Supposedly, if we stay at 6, control of the House will be a coin toss, which is too close for my taste. By generic ballots, I mean that they just ask people, would you be more likely to vote for a Democrat or a Republican in the next election? They say that the shift from 12 points to 6 points is due to issues such as the healthcare debate and the tax bill having subsided. God, people have the shortest memories. And also that the economy has been strong. That being said, there's a reason we don't want to put too much faith in the day-to-day fluctuations of polls. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but the stock market has not been its excited self that we have gotten used to this year. It is not disastrous. Mostly this stock market is just correcting itself, but it is bound to degrade confidence. The most reliable data came in the district-by-district analysis. First of all, it's positively raining money on Democrats. The report says, quote, in the fourth quarter of 2017, 39 Republican House incumbents were outraised by at least one Democratic challenger, and private polls and special election results suggest Democrats were highly competitive. Even in some districts, President Trump won by wide margins, unquote. Which is confusing, right? How is it that nationally, Republicans are narrowing the gap, but district by district, Dems are widening the lead? The answer? The macro outlook for the House national polls and the micro view, district by district, aren't diverging. They're coming into alignment.
What?
If that makes sense to you, rock on. This kind of stuff is beyond my unpaid grade. Republicans are placing their hopes on the economy, national defense, opposition research, and finally, the old faithful Nancy Pelosi bashing, which they have been doing for a decade. So we'll see. We can all take this as very good news, but we shouldn't get complacent because things are changing a mile a minute.
There's this man named Scott Pruitt. He's been anointed the head of the EPA. He's suing them yesterday, running the show today. Since taking office, he's been a man on a mission to make sure we keep increasing our carbon emissions. He doesn't believe in science because he's paid in full. Said the Paris Climate Accord is just a bunch of bull.
That was the musical stylings of Fisher Stevens. Let's let something sink in for a minute. Our military, our conservative military, believes in climate change. They see it as a threat, and our government does not. Let's muse about that for a minute. Consider the fact that, and we have talked about this before, consider the fact that America is the only major developed country, maybe the only country, that has a major political party that denies the existence of climate change. And that party, of course, runs our government. National security experts, including those in the Pentagon, have also warned that climate change is set to create a sprawling humanitarian challenge as millions of people look to escape failing crops, inundated land, drought, and conflict. Meanwhile, the head of our Environmental Protection Agency...
Got Pruitt.
...deigned to admit that humans are contributing to climate change, to a certain degree, but added, quote, "We know humans have most flourished during times of warming trends. There are assumptions made that because the climate is warming, that it is necessarily a bad thing." Unquote. Right. Flourished. Right. The thing is, it's not just the Republican Party now that is denying the existence of climate change. Or it is, but now officially, we have had an entire state denying it. Idaho has decided to unteach their children. They done learned good. On Wednesday, just after days of public testimony from students and teachers who overwhelmingly supported including climate science in public school standards, lawmakers in Idaho voted to adopt new science standards for the state, but chose to remove key references to climate science. According to Think Progress, the lawmakers also voted to remove one paragraph from the state's performance standards that asks students to be able to, quote, "describe that energy and fuels are derived from natural resources and their uses affect the environment," unquote. Examples of how fuels affect the environment include, quote, "air pollution from burning fossil fuels," unquote. Ah! Are they winning? Are the science deniers winning the battle in the U.S.? Or government aside? Because you know that more states are bound to follow now that Idaho has done it. Both Texas and West Virginia have restricted what students can learn about climate science through their state boards of education. And in 2017, nine states considered bills that would either restrict the kind of climate science taught to students or encourage teachers to teach alternative sides to the climate debate.
Oh, that's stupid!
Alabama, however, was the only state to successfully pass a bill which encourages academic freedom regarding scientific evidence subjects. Unquote. Here is my pathetic grasp at hope. Science-denying conservatives are now, rarely, flat-out denying the existence of climate change. They now say that the climate is changing, but it is unclear that humans are contributing to it. But many now even admit that humans are contributing to it, but it is unclear as to how much. Or they resort to more ridiculous arguments like good old Pruitt saying things like, "It is good for humans to live in a warmer climate."
Oh my god.
So here's my thing. Since our arguments are evolving, maybe before too long, their argument will evolve into truth? Maybe? Please? One other note of encouragement. Students in Idaho publicly decried attempts to restrict climate science in the classrooms, telling lawmakers that political ideology was placing students at a disadvantage for future jobs in science and technology. And they would be right.
Polluting our water! Polluting our air! We gotta get rid of these dangerous people! It's time we all care!
Also on climate, surprising no one. T-Rex Tillerson, State Department, missed its January 1st climate change report deadline. It was to submit the report to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. They have yet to submit the climate action report or commence the public comment period required prior to its release. As PBS explained, quote, the report inventories greenhouse gas emissions and details progress towards cutting pollution, unquote. The Center for Biological Diversity has threatened to sue the State Department unless it produces the overdue report. Now, our science-denying government has withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord, but they do want to remain in the UN Charter. The State Department told The Hill that it, quote, intends to submit the national communication to the UNFCCC. The report is under development, unquote. So, we'll see. Moving on. This is your reminder that Puerto Rico is still undergoing a humanitarian crisis. It's time we check in with Puerto Rico. According to a report released by the Commission for the Prevention of Suicide, more than 253 Puerto Ricans committed suicide in 2017. That is a 29% increase from the prior year's suicide rate. Many health specialists are attributing this to the recent hurricanes. The increase in patients and clinics with severe mental health issues has risen dramatically since the hurricanes. This seems very unsurprising. That kind of trauma will tip the most healthy of us. It is shameful that this American territory is still without power.
Still.
According to Vox, some 1.36 million Americans are without power right now, and it isn't coming back anytime soon. It is the longest blackout in modern history. 40% of the island's population cannot turn on the lights, refrigerate food, or run water pumps. Puerto Rico is being compared by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to Iraq after the U.S. invasion in 2003, and estimated that Puerto Rico would need 50,000 utility poles and 6,500 miles of cable to restore its power system. Congress appropriated a $4.9 billion recovery loan rather than a grant for Puerto Rico in October, because Republicans. But FEMA and the Treasury Department said in January that the territory may not even get that money because the local government still has cash in its coffers. Because Republicans. Trump-loving Democrat Ricardo Rossello, Puerto Rico's governor, who seems rather corrupt himself, did announce this week that he reached a deal with Congress to get $2 billion to repair the island's energy infrastructure. But this is problematic because of that stupid Jones Act that our Congress refuses to lift. Because Republicans. That is the shipping regulation that requires that only U.S.-built ships transport goods between U.S. ports. This law ends up limiting the number of ships that can transport much-needed grid repair supplies to Puerto Rico and drastically raises their cost. Because of all of this, they don't expect to have power restored till May. Meanwhile, their debt crisis continues. And 200,000 Puerto Ricans have left the island since Maria, and many will not come back. So the power utility will have fewer customers with which to pay back their investments. And now, Puerto Rico is facing disaster capitalism. If we remember, disaster capitalism is the practice by which a government or a regime, etc., takes advantage of a major disaster to adopt capitalistic economic policies that the population would be less likely to accept under normal circumstances. Governor Ricardo Rossello, who is a wolf in sheep's clothing, announced Monday that he will begin the process of selling the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, PREPA, pending the approval of a federal judge and the island's legislature. He is privatizing their electrical grid.
Oh no!
Now, PREPA is no angel and has made many mistakes, but they are a far better choice for the people than the privatization of utility. Disaster capitalism.
Disaster capitalism lets corporations profit off a society still reeling from a disaster.
According to reporter Naomi Klein, who wrote The Shock Doctrine, Puerto Rico has been laying the groundwork for privatization for years. Winona Hauter of Food and Water Watch called the decision catastrophic and indicative of the same pattern of Donald's administration prioritizing wealthy companies that aim to take over public services. Quote, the decision to privatize Puerto Rico's state-owned power company follows the same disastrous path mapped out in the Trump administration's drafted infrastructure plan. Whether it is water or energy, privatization helps Wall Street at the expense of the well-being and health of communities, particularly low-income families and people of color. unquote. More on Donald's infrastructure plan later in the show. The Intercept and Slate have reported that the workers on the ground, utility workers and union workers, have accused PREPA of hoarding supplies, and the union workers even went so far as to say that PREPA has intentionally sabotaged efforts to repair the electric grid in order to pave the way to privatization. Hoter says there is a better way. Quote, a just and equitable infrastructure plan would dedicate funding for water systems, have a progressive revenue stream, and prioritize vulnerable communities with the greatest affordability and public health needs like Puerto Rico. This plan does none of this. Unquote. The disaster capitalism doesn't stop there, though.
Oh, crap.
Raw Story reports that Governor Ricardo and his administration unveiled a broad education reform bill Tuesday aimed at incorporating school vouchers and charter schools into the bankrupt U.S. territory education system. The voucher program, projected to begin during the 2019 to 2020 school year, would allow parents to choose public or private school alternatives. 10 days previous to the governor's announcement, the island's education secretary said that she planned to decentralize Puerto Rico's education department and introduce autonomous schools. Governor Ricardo Rossello also said every public school teacher in Puerto Rico would receive a $1,500 annual salary increase beginning next school year, which is great. But the teachers are having none of it. The American Federation of Teachers, AFT, which represents 40,000 educators in Puerto Rico, are scornful of the move. AFT President Randy Weingarten told Reuters that the plan doesn't add up, saying that salary bumps will do nothing without more investment in their struggling schools. And this, too, seems to be something that the governor has wanted to do long before the hurricane, and is using this disaster as an excuse to get her done. His father, who was governor in the 90s, had pursued a voucher system, but the Puerto Rico Supreme Court struck it down, saying that the island's constitution prohibited using public money to fund privately run schools. Governor Rosello's new Schools for the Rich plan is likely to run into the same problem. So, what is wrong with voucher programs? Because, as you know, our federal government and woman who learned to count to four and then got confused and left the rest of her learning up to Jesus, Betsy Bible-Banging DeVos, wants to do the same for the whole of America.
Praise Jesus!
The Institute for Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education released a study last year showing that students randomly selected to receive a voucher under the D.C. Opportunity Scholarship Program had lower math achievement after 1 year compared to students who were not selected. The program not only failed to boost students' performance, but it actually made it worse.
Oh no!
And these findings come on the heels of similarly rigorous studies of voucher programs in Ohio and Louisiana that found even worse outcomes. Also, there is a legitimate argument that our founding fathers would have opposed school vouchers. Vouchers divert public money to unaccountable private schools. The vast majority of private schools are run by religious groups. According to the U.S. Department of Education, 76% of private schools have a religious affiliation. Over 80% of students attending private schools are enrolled in religious institutions. Essentially, vouchers force Americans to pay taxes to support religion. The First Amendment guarantees religious liberty. In America, all religious activities should be supported only with voluntary contributions. James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, and our founding fathers strongly supported the separation of church and state and opposed taxation to support religion. Ben Franklin said, quote,
when religion is good, I conceive it will support itself. And when it does not support itself, and God does not care to support it, so that its professors are obliged to call for the help of civil power, 'tis a sign, I apprehend, of its being a bad one.
Unquote. The good news is, where DeVos is trying to federalize the voucher system, she would run into some legal challenges. According to Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, some 36 states have separation of church and state provisions in their constitutions that are even stronger than the U.S. Constitution. These provisions often more explicitly bar taxpayer money from being used to fund religious schools and education. Some state courts have already ruled that voucher systems are unconstitutional. Besides, the people don't want it. Since 1967, voters in 23 states have rejected vouchers and other forms of tax aid to religious schools at the ballot box. And despite what those on the right say, vouchers do not improve opportunities for students from low-income families. Quite the opposite, actually. The vouchers often do not cover the entire cost of the tuition or other mandatory fees for private schools, meaning only families with the money to cover the cost of the rest of the tuition, uniforms, transportation, books, and other supplies can use the vouchers. In Cleveland, the majority of families who were granted a voucher did not use it, citing the additional cost as the reason they could not use the voucher. Vouchers actually hurt low-income families by undermining the public schools they rely on. And vouchers do not save taxpayer money. Instead of decreasing education cost, taxpayer money that would ordinarily go to public schools now pays for the vouchers. And a 1999 study of Cleveland's program showed that the loss of a few students at the school does not reduce fixed costs such as teacher salaries, textbooks, supplies, utilities, and maintenance costs. Public schools run the risk of losing state funding to pay for vouchers without being able to cut their overall operating cost. In addition, voucher programs cost the state money to administer. In Milwaukee, which has been disproportionately burdened in a statewide voucher funding scheme, the city has had to raise property taxes several times since the voucher program began in order to ensure adequate funding for the city's schools. Vouchers do not increase education choice. Voucher programs do not increase choice for parents because it's the private schools that will ultimately decide whether to admit the student. These institutions are not required to give the parents the information necessary to determine whether the school is meeting their child's needs. Under voucher programs, private schools are often not required to test students, publish curriculum, or meet many other standards.
Yes!
Even when legislatures have attempted to mandate accountability standards in voucher programs, private schools have not done what is required of them. Vouchers lead to private schools of questionable quality. In Milwaukee and Cleveland, the availability of vouchers led con artists to create fly-by-night schools in order to milk the public purse. One Milwaukee school was run by a man with a long criminal record, and in Cleveland, one of those schools operated out of a dilapidated church building with inadequate heat and no fire alarms. Another school, quote-unquote, educated children by having them watch videos all day.
This is awesome!
Fundamentalist Christian academies have been growing in number. Many of these schools offer education far outside the mainstream. They teach creationism in lieu of evolution, offer a discredited, quote-unquote, Christian nation approach to American history, and put forth controversial ideas about other religions, the role of women in society, gay rights, and other issues. Now, legally, these schools may teach this way, but taxpayers should not be expected to pay for it.
That's right!
Vouchers distract from the real issue of reform. Voucher plans usually allow a small percentage of children to leave public schools for enrollment in private schools. This does nothing for the large percentage of kids left behind. Most public schools do a very good job. Those that don't should be fixed, not abandoned. Vouchers become an excuse for politicians to dodge issues like adequate funding, class size, teacher training, and curriculum reform. 90% of American children attend public schools. Our focus should be on fully funding and improving this system, not siphoning money into private systems.
Yes!
Okay, I want to get back to Donald's proposed infrastructure plan. Because what is happening in Puerto Rico, our government really wants to do federally. In Donald's painful State of the Union address, Donald called for a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. Food and Water Watch's executive director, Winona Hunter, again, denounced the president's misleading rhetoric and argued that his infrastructure proposals amount to little more than a, quote, giveaway to cronies and financiers, unquote. She says they will force states to cover the cost. Well, a newly leaked White House infrastructure memo calls for a drastic rollback of environmental rules to expedite oil pipeline construction and other projects. Hauter argued that Donald's, quote, plan is to deregulate and privatize its disaster capitalism cloaked as progress. It is fitting that his address took place one day before FEMA pulls out of Puerto Rico, where people are still lacking clean water, infrastructure, and access to energy. There will be many more Americans suffering the same fate if our federal government leaders continue to prioritize private profits over the public good, unquote. Not to mention the fact that they have already developed a plan. I guess It is illegal. It violates the federal transparency laws. The advocacy group, Democracy Forward, argued in a report released on Monday that the White House's proposals are a blueprint for cronyism.
Cronyism.
The appointment of friends and associates to positions of authority without proper regard to their qualifications.
Characterizing what is currently known about the president's infrastructure strategy as the capstone of his conflicts of interest and anti-environment agenda, Democracy Forward observes that Donald's proposals would allow the White House to 1. Award new infrastructure grants directly to private companies, 2. Empower companies to charge tolls and fees on American roads and bridges, 3. Cut career officials and agency experts out of project and permitting decisions, and 4. Eliminate regulatory and legal safeguards that protect against corruption.
Oh, no!
Which all equals more to fight in 2018. Okay, Thursday night, Rand Paul shut down the government. Briefly. Now, we can debate whether or not he was right to do so, but one thing is not up for debate. Rand Paul was right about why he shut the government down.
How come you were against President Obama's deficits, and then how come you're for Republican deficits? Isn't that the very definition of intellectual dishonesty? If you were against President Obama's deficits, and now you're for the Republican deficits, isn't that the very definition of hypocrisy?
As for the budget deal, I'm not happy. I don't know how many options the Democrats really had, but I feel like they gave up on the only real leverage they had for a DACA bill. The military won, and Dreamers lost. There are a lot of good things in the bill that we needed, like funding the community health centers and disaster aid, but still. But at least Donald didn't get any of his precious immigration demands, so that's something. What happens next is a mystery. The future for Dreamers looks grim, but we'll continue to fight for them. Now, more than ever, we must step up our game, calling, protesting, and doing everything we can to save the future of these Americans in all but name. Before I go, in Washington, D.C., and in more than 24 states across the country on Monday, supporters of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, gathered to kick off 40 days of moral action to highlight, quote, the humanitarian impact of policies which promote systemic racism, poverty, the war economy, and environmental devastation, unquote. Led by co-chairs Reverend Dr. William J. Barber and Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, and inspired by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s original Poor People's Campaign in the late 1960s. The campaign, which was announced last year, live-streamed a press conference from D.C. and delivered to lawmakers a letter outlining their demands for policy changes. Their Facebook page reads, quote, when one in two Americans is poor and low income, and the news of the day is climate chaos, police brutality, and tax cuts for the wealthy, we need a moral revival in America more urgently than ever. 50 years after Dr. King and others called for a poor people's campaign, it is time to not commemorate their work, but to reignite it. Unquote. If you wish to add your name and become one of the tens of thousands joining the campaign, go to poorpeoplescampaign.org now. I am not a religious person, but this is the kind of evangelism that inspires me. Again, that's the poorpeoplescampaign.org. Okay, thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crowddiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice and on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I have discussed in this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!
Oh, you are beautiful, every single one of you. Look at us. We are making it happen. We are making the change. We are living through this time. We will tell our children and our children's children what we were doing in this time when we changed the world. Changing the world.
Oh! I died.